This is Kimberly Moffitt sitting in for Mark Steiner. And we're talking this morning about the layoffs that hit staff and some teachers at Baltimore City Schools last week. Last Wednesday, 159 positions were eliminated and layoff notices were sent out. And then this past Friday, 59 additional positions were eliminated, including non-instructional assistants, hall monitors, and office staff at schools, bringing the total of laid-off employees to over 200. Baltimore City School says this restructuring is necessary to deal with the budget deficit. The school system said that many of these positions were duplicates, but that it is not the sentiment of many in the inside of central office. And that's what we want to talk about today. What will this mean for our children? So joining me this morning in the studio to discuss all of this is Dr. Ronnie Ellington, who is an associate professor of mathematics education at Morgan State University and also our former member of City Schools PCAB entity, which is the Parent and Community Advisory Board for North Avenue. Good morning.
Good morning.
We also have Bobby McDonald in with us. She's the executive director of the City Neighbors Foundation, which operates three charter schools in the city for us. Good morning, Bobby.
Thanks for having me.
And Jimmy Giddings, who is the president of PSASA, the Public School Administrators and Supervisors Association, AFSA Local 25, who began his career with the Baltimore City Public School System in 1971 as a second grade teacher at City Springs Elementary School. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about this very important issue. Now that we know at least where we stand right now is that we're at over 200 layoffs in our school system. And I'd like to start by just asking all three of you, what do you think this means for our school district? And I'll start with you, Dr. Ellington.
I was going to concede to the brother who had the esteemed brother to my left. I'm going to defer my comments, and I want to concede to you because I think you have something to say. I've been watching some comments that you've been making over.
Mr. Giddings, talk to us.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. First, I'd like to elaborate that I fully support Dr. Thornton. He walked into a hornet's nest. A deficit that was not created under his administration, but created under a previous administration. And the way he is handling this deficit, of course, I have concerns about it whenever we have layoffs or job eliminations. But I think Dr. Thornton is doing the best he can. Now, the impact that it's having on the system, I can only speak to the administrators that our union represents. That would be the specialists, coordinators, supervisors, assistant principals, and principals. Before these eliminations took place, I was assured that no administrator would be impacted by these layoffs. Unfortunately, we represent, our union represents some 600 individuals, and 24 of those individuals received
okay.
Letters that their positions were eliminated. I want to emphasize that those 24 individuals, I have assured, will have a position in the Baltimore City School System by June 30th. I can't speak for anyone, any other union. I can only speak for the union that I represent. I've been working very closely with Dr. Grillo and Dr. Thornton to ensure that these 24 individuals would secure some type of position before June 30th.
So not necessarily as another administrator, but some other capacity they may fulfill for city schools.
That is correct. I don't want to take up all the time. Our union has our attorneys looking into the process in which this elimination of positions took place, and we have concerns about it. We're finding that a number of the jobs that were eliminated, and again, I can only speak for the administrative union. the 24 positions that were eliminated under our union, we're finding that other positions are being created, basically doing this in the same capacity. And that gives me a major concern, if this is even legal to do at this point.
Okay. Dr. Ellington, I called on you first because the parent voice is always so very important to me when we have these conversations about school city schools and what's happening with public education. So I want to come back to you.
One of the things that's missing from the conversation, I've heard the union voice and I've heard Dr. Thornton say that there was, quote, duplication. What I'm failing to see is the rationale for how the decisions were made. And that it's hard to critique a decision when you don't know who the positions are that are affected, what was the rationale, and then what's the direct impact on students. We don't have that information. All we know is 200 people are gone. They got pink slips. A couple of friends of mine called me and said, I'm one of those people. Right. You know, I have friends.
I got those calls too.
Yeah, like that was me, or they were reassigned or whatever. So without a rationale for why, because I get when you're in budget, I have a family, and when your budget's crunched, you make choices. Without a framework for understanding those choices, it's hard to see what the direct impact will be on students. And that's where I'm struggling with. Well, what made these duplicates? What were these people's roles? And then I heard the same thing, that some positions are being reworked and, you know, it's going to be opened up. It's kind of mysterious in terms of how. So somebody else might have some more information. But from a parent standpoint, it's hard for me to decide how it's going to impact my daughter or somebody's kid when you really don't know what the framework was.
So, Bobby, give us some of your purview on this as someone who is operating and responsible for three different schools in the city, who may have also been affected by this in terms of what your schools are dealing with in its own budget deficit. What's your sense of this layoff process and how it may impact what's going on in your three schools?
Thanks. I think that we definitely, of course, are impacted at City Neighbors, and charter schools, like all traditional schools, are impacted. I think really the heart of the matter that Ronnie was getting to is, you know, what is the approach and what do these layoffs indicate? You know, I think we brought in Dr. Thornton to continue an idea of how this system can run and in a way that would really support school leaders having autonomy and power at the school level to make decisions and respond to the needs of the children in their schools. And really, since Dr. Thornton's been here, we've just seen lots of evidence that indicates a more centralized approach, you know, a real lack of transparency, a lack of communication of the vision. What is the vision that's driving the decisions is really an essential part that's missing. And so, you know, of course, it affects our schools. We've had to make cuts at all of our schools. And but I think the greater picture is for the system, you know, what's our theory of action? How do we create a system that can allow our public schools to thrive?
Yeah, I would agree. And I was at a function last night, and Dr. Thornton's name came up quite a bit because, of course, we were talking about the civil unrest in the city and how that's directly related, how many believe that's directly related to education or lack thereof in the city. So what are we doing to address these points? And many people did mention his name to say we don't know the direction he's going in and what he plans to do, because so much does seem to be happening behind closed doors. And I'm sure, I mean, Mr. Giddings, you might have a different perspective on that since you do have more access than the rest of us do. But I'm certainly open to listening. Like, do you feel there is a vision, there is a direction? Are we continuing what Dr. Alonzo created as a system being school-based, or are we moving back to this more centralized running of the system back at North Avenue?
I'm getting the feeling we're moving back to more of a centralized running of the system. And it concerns me greatly what's happening in our schools as far as school-based management is concerned. I think our principals are losing the authority, excuse me, to have school-based management. And that, I think, is going to cause a major problem in the education of our students here in Baltimore City. Principals need the power and opportunity to make decisions in their schools without other influences coming from central office. Central office can provide support, but principals need to be the ones making the final decisions in their schools. And I was assured that that there would be no impact in our schools. And I have received a number of calls from principals indicating that they have lost support staff
right.
in the buildings, mm-hmm. Your paraprofessionals, your hall monitors. These are positions that are needed in the Baltimore City public school system.
Absolutely.
And our principals need to be able to keep those positions in their schools.
So I will, I guess, fully disclose that I struggle with, I sit on the fence often about that very issue, because I look at some of our schools that run very well and the principals are able to handle what their responsibilities are for what's happening in the building. But then I look at other schools where it's clear that the principals are struggling and that they don't have the wherewithal to actually carry out what necessarily needs to happen in the building for the schools. So I understand the desire for the connection to central office while also believing that there does need to be some autonomy for principals. But our principals are not all one and the same, and they don't all seem to have the same strengths and skill set to be able to pull off some of what I think needs to be done in our schools.
Well, and remember, they're not all in the same context, too. So what one principal has to deal with in a particular context
absolutely.
Is very different.
That's
so
right.
When you talk about leadership, you're talking about not just the person, but you're talking about the climate, the culture, the environment.
Yeah.
So we have to look at it holistically
absolutely.
And what the challenges are. And I think sometimes we're easy to say, it's just the leadership, or it's just this, or we just cut jobs. We just do things kind of unilaterally without looking at the impact and the surrounding factors. And I think that's what's been done here with the removal of positions. I'm okay with leadership making choices, because sometimes when you're in financial crisis, you make hard choices. But what I'm not okay with is not being clear of the rationale for those choices and the impact of those choices.
And so I think that speaks to what Bobby was saying about not having that clear sense of communication.
And
that,
vision. She
right.
mentioned, like, where is the school system going? With whether you like Dr. Alonzo or not, you know, me and him had our challenges, Lord bless him. But I knew where he came from. I knew what he stood for. I knew how he rolled, right? There's something in knowing that, and then you just say, okay, I get where you roll. With Dr. Thornton, I'm not so certain. I'm just like, maybe he's the cleanup man. Like, I don't quite
I was
know.
Hoping for him to be the cleanup man,
but
actually.
Well, in the hood, we have a whole framework for the cleanup man, right? It's a whole,
I was looking for him to be what the hood says is the cleanup man. Because there is some cleaning up that needs to happen in our school system. I want to just say that you can join this conversation now by calling us at 410-319-8888, because we do want to hear from you. And we also need to say that we did reach out to Baltimore City Schools for this segment, and they weren't able to participate today. But City School CEO Dr. Thornton will be joining us here on the Mark Steiner Show in the coming weeks. And so maybe we'll have an opportunity to hear himself articulate some of this vision and whether or not he believes that he has been very effective at communicating to us what that vision actually is. But I want to go back to, because I can't leave this conversation without talking about who I believe personally is the most important at the center of this conversation, which is our children. This does definitely affect adults and their lives, but I think there is a trickle-down effect that enters into our classrooms and our buildings and how our students, our children, are responding to what might be the loss of important staff members in the buildings, even those who remain in the buildings, and the morale that shifts as a result of these layoffs. How does that impact our children and our students? Bobby, would you like to answer?
Sure. So I think I really appreciate this question. I think the most important thing is you know, how we view kids in this city. So when you view children as powerful and creative and imaginative and with the deepest respect, you design schools and you design systems that allow them to thrive. You allow it so teachers can do their work and principals can do their work, and the system is designed to facilitate that and help it. So again, you know, I understand that that Dr. Thornton's coming in and there's recurring pressures from things that are already built in, like the teacher's contract, that are causing the budget deficits. But he also created and expanded priorities by $32 million as well. So the management has to be based on a vision. And that vision of children is really the conversation Baltimore wants to be in. What are we teaching the kids, and how are we teaching them, and why are we over-testing them, by the way, to such an extent?
That's another radio segment.
I know it is.
By itself.
To me, it's really, really embedded and connected to this conversation. Why is it in Baltimore that we're imagining a public school system that's treating kids in the way that we're treating them? So I think it's really important, the relationships, the folks we've had to cut back on at City Neighbors are people who are all in relationship with our kids. But that bigger picture of how do we create a school where kids are really known, loved, and inspired is all connected to this conversation.
Yeah. And I want to come back to that after our break, because we've got to take a quick break here. And we'll continue this conversation right after these messages. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.meq.com. And on our way to break, we're hearing Where is the Love by Roberta Flack and Donnie Hathaway. We're playing this because it was one of the top 100 hits of 1972, the year that Angela Davis was acquitted on this day in history. We'll be right back. Kimberly Moffitt sitting in for Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show, your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. And that was Get on the Good Foot, Part 1 by James Brown. We're playing that because it was one of the top 100 hits of 1972 as well. And we are having a fabulous discussion in the studio without you, but we want you to join and participate. Please feel free to join us by calling directly into the studio. We'd love to hear you this morning. So please join us. I wanted to continue our conversation that we had started right before the break, where we were talking about how this directly impacts our students, our children in the school system. And I want to follow up with that by just raising a question of what else do we think needs to be done by North Avenue, by Dr. Thornton, to address this deficit while also enhancing the success of our schools? Are there things that we need to be thinking about, or he needs to be thinking about, that we don't think or we don't see actually occurring right now? Well, that was a good question, huh?
When you say enhancing our schools...
Enhancing the success of our schools, yes.
Enhancing the success of our students.
Absolutely.
In the schools.
Absolutely.
I have to go back, let's say, 3 years, 4 years, under a previous administration, when we lost literally 85% of our seasoned administrators.
That's what I'm talking.
And now we
shake up.
Now we're in a situation where we have young administrators who need guidance and support from central office to ensure that our children receive the best education they possibly can. And in doing that, our young administrators need guidance, and there are very few seasoned principals and administrators left to provide that guidance. So Dr. Thornton needs to come up with some type of rationale to provide support and the things that our young administrators need so they can provide for the schools in the proper way that they should be.
I'm having a problem with this one. I'm sorry, I am.
Bobby, let's hear
with all due respect. I am having a problem with that one. In the 12 years that I've been here, I haven't seen any evidence ever of central office providing great mentorship or a great way to, you know, help principals do their work. In fact, I think they should redefine their role and give that up and admit that they don't know how to do that. And they're not in the classrooms teaching kids, and allow folks who really are driven with a passion to create a system that works and who are experts in that field to come together and support each other and create those. And I'm talking about principals helping principals. And in that, I agree with you.
I have to slightly disagree with that. central office, I have found there is a lack of communication between central office and our schools. The individuals at central office want to provide the proper service to our principals. But when a principal starts receiving 10, 15 different emails and directives a day, and they're all coming from different individuals at central office, there's something wrong with that process. It needs to be a collaboration of all of our central office staff before sending out these massive communications and directives to our principals.
But I hear Bobby agreeing with that point, but believing that not necessarily is it about seasoned administrators versus those who are younger that are causing some of the problems in the schools.
I'm not saying that the younger administrators are causing the problem. By no means am I saying that. I am saying that our younger and newly assigned administrators, especially in our schools, need that hand of guidance and support. They're doing what they need to do. It's just that they need more support given to them. That's not just our young newly assigned administrator. That's all of our administrators.
Isn't that what we saw the executive directors of the different networks responsible for?
Well, they were so ineffective.
Who I know are also a part of these layoffs that have occurred.
Every single executive director has received a letter of elimination of their position. As of June 30th.
So Alonzo created a system of networks with head executive directors. But I want to say that that system actually never really went into the vision of what I think he was putting forward, which was one of really collaborating, really supporting principals. It became absolutely all about compliance.
Yes, that's
and
what I'm
Go
I
ahead,
gonna, I was
going to
make
go
that
ahead.
Point. Yeah. Because that, when you were talking, I was listening. I was like, okay, what's the real kind of issue here? Is what's the role of central office? So there's been this conversation about support, which I agree with you, has always been wishy-washy. A lot of it has been policing, oversight, you know, policy building and stuff like that, people had roles, but they weren't really congruent with the support role that they were initially created for, including the network idea.
So they were just coming in saying do, but not necessarily
not even
supporting.
That. I don't even think. No. Not even that. But just the networks were designed to be these networks of schools that come together and collaborate on professional development. And
right.
So they became kind of the hubs. If you think about a hub. But they were never the hubs because they could never actually do the work of pulling the schools together to actually facilitate the network's work. You see, if I'm in a network of 10 schools and I have an executive director and all, it's supposed to be, we're supposed to be coming together, doing cross planning, professional development. That never really panned out. It became a way to just hold them accountable at another level. That's the issue. So most of the work I see at Central Office is about compliance, oversight, making sure people do what they need to do, but not necessarily the support role that the brother here is talking about, where the Central Office becomes a hub of what do you need, we're here for you,
exactly,
kind of thing. It's more of a, you ain't do this, we going to tell you, we're going to send you an email, we're going to do-da-da-da. It becomes more punitive than it becomes supportive.
Yep.
Then it begs the question, with these people gone, how is it going to affect our schools? If it was all punitive and oversight, then maybe it won't. I don't know. That's why I want to know the framework. Like, how is this change going to impact the day-to-day lives of students?
Right, right. And and is this a part of this restructuring or reorganization that he has as a vision that we just still aren't quite
and
clear
And you know
about?
Where he came from. See, I know his vision. You don't have to tell me your vision. Like I said, I'm from environments where we don't tell you what we up to. You just look at us and go, oh, yeah, that's what you can see where he came from in his current experience, like you said. He's an old statesman. He's a seasoned superintendent from the old school. It's centralized. Come on now. It's about central efficiency and making sure that the operations run a certain way and that there's oversight and centralness. That's his vision. Now, whether he articulated that, but I can just infer through using my context clues that that's part of his vision, is to deal with the money issue, to have it more centralized, and to clean up some of the things that were left behind from our former administration. I like using that.
Or dictatorship.
I mean, if that is the case, Ronnie, then we're going to need to hear, right?
Well, if you hear it, then you say, Ronnie told me that.
I'm just saying, we're going to need to hear that clear vision. Because from my perspective, what I've experienced is a loss of funding, a loss of staffing, communications unclear. We've never for this system, part of the thriving sector of the system right now are charter schools, where there is a lot of school-based power. As charter schools in this system, we've lost so much of our communication, our transparency. We don't even have a funding formula this year. It's ridiculous. So if the centralized thing is this thing, and I'd just like to know, where in the United States is there any example of that working? You know, where is that actually working?
Now, there you go with working.
There she go. I'm sorry.
I thought we were here to get it done. Actually, kids, what's going on?
Oh, my God.
So if you're just joining us, you see how lively the conversation is. Feel free to join us and enjoy the talk on the 200 layoffs of Baltimore City School Central Office staff and school staff that just took place over the last week and a half. I'm in the studio talking with Dr. Ronnie Ellington, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education at Morgan State University, and also a former member of the PCAB entity at Central Office. I'm also here with Bobby McDonald, who is Executive Director of the City Neighbors Foundation, which operates three charter schools in the city, and Mr. Jimmy Giddings, who is the president of PSASA, the Public School Administrators and Supervisors Association. So please join us on the talk. So do we see anything else that seems to be or needs to happen in terms of this restructuring or reorganization that we think Dr. Thornton is thinking about? And I know I keep looking back over at you, Mr. Giddings, because we believe you have greater access than the rest of us. So we want to know what you know.
I know I'm disappointed in the elimination positions at Central Office, but when we're in a deficit, as great as we are in, bodies are going to be impacted. And again, I'm going to back off a little bit. I'm not going to blame Dr. Thornton for this.
I don't either.
I'm not going to blame him for this. We're talking about his vision, and we definitely need to know what his vision is. There's no question about that. But this deficit was created under a previous administration, and now we are suffering. And I think it's important that this be said also. When Marietta English, the president of BTU, the teachers union, and myself, the president of the administrative union, were negotiating our contracts a few years ago, the first thing that we said. How can the system afford this? Mm. We had no idea that, no, let me take that back. Both of us knew that this was going to have a massive impact on this year's budget.
So it was just delaying things, but the reality is that it was going to come.
And we weren't going to refuse a contract that was presented to us. It was a decent contract under the assurance of the previous administration that the system could pay for this.
Right.
And it has just backfired.
Absolutely. We've got Bill on the line from Northeast Baltimore that has a question for us. Bill, love to hear from you.
Yes, first of all, just let me say thank you. How are you doing, Jimmy? This is Bill Goodney. My question is this. Jimmy, I just found out, and I guess I'm disappointed. Why nobody not saying nothing about the public school system not getting none of the money from the lottery? Wasn't the school system supposed to get some of that lottery money? And from my understanding, according to a board member, they say that the school system does not get none of that money. And I can't understand why ain't nobody saying nothing about it.
Bill, I agree with you 110%. But I cannot, and everyone sitting at this table can't determine why the lottery money is not coming to the system. We have spoken about this a number of times. And it is always pushed back in the corner. Unfortunately, I can't really answer your question, Bill.
I mean, Bill, it's a great question. I just want to say, you know, in the minus column on page 8 of their budget book, you know, they have three things. Their own budget drivers leading in a deficit of $72 million bucks, and that's the contracts and the decisions they've made. Mm-hmm. The cost of new and expanded priorities, that's $32.9 million. And then the cut in state funding, which is mm-hmm. another $35.6 mm-hmm. million. I mean, the governor needs to fully fund the public school system. Just, okay, whatever with the lottery, but the governor needs to fully fund the public school system as well.
And see, he's using a financial argument not to do that. So everybody's using the numbers for their benefit.
Right.
So the governor's saying, well, you guys have had an increase in your tax base or whatever reason he's saying, so you don't need state funding as much. So everybody's using their own hook to say, well, it's your issue. It's you deal with it. You know what I'm saying? So that's another issue. People are fudging right. it. And the governor's argument sounds logical
right.
in the sense of
right.
you have
right.
more revenues from taxes. We're just supplementing. We're now not going to fund you at a certain rate. And then we sent the whole thing about Fairfax is only getting $13,000 a
right.
kid. You're getting
right.
$17,000 a
right.
kid. What you tripping over? You know what I'm saying? So then people use the numbers to say Baltimore is overfunded. So, you know, it's all in how you try to craft the argument for who gets money and how and under what conditions.
And it does bear the question, just to pull on Dr. Ellington's point, that if you are using data to say, well, Fairfax County
yeah. –
it supports its students by $13,500 per student expenditure each year. And we are in Baltimore City at $17,000 per student per year. Then it starts to raise questions about, well, does it take that much more money to educate the students of Baltimore City? What's going on that you have that much money and you're still not able to produce like a Fairfax County public schools is actually doing? So that argument starts to make sense to a number of people.
Yeah, because
to
people
say,
again, I'm a mathematician. I'm a mathematician by training. You can make numbers say what you want them to say, and that's what I'm so sick of people talking about test numbers and these numbers. The way your numbers are built on certain assumptions. When you start to question the assumptions that things are built on, then you see why, even though Baltimore City has more per child expenditures, that we're not talking about apples and apples, Fairfax
right.
count.
That's
so,
right.
but the numbers, but people throw the numbers out there to throw you off track. Well, these are what the numbers saying. You know, Baltimore kids are failing, and then they use numbers for that, and they use numbers for we're already funding y'all. But there's deeper issues that nobody really want to discuss.
That Fairfax County doesn't have.
And don't even, but we can't go there because then it becomes this, oh, no, we can't go there. All kids are equal. Yes, all kids are equal, but not all contexts are equal.
Right.
And that's
and
real
issues.
Talk.
Yes.
And we don't want to have that discussion because that becomes a, oh, no, no, no. We can't talk about historic inequities. We can't talk about education debt. We can't talk about anything that really impacts the lives of children in any meaningful way. We want to keep it to these super official conversation. So, but I'm going to leave that on the table.
So we've got Maria on the line calling. Maria, please, love to hear your question.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say that all of you all, and I know that you all have the children's best interest because I can hear it, and everyone knows that our children have never been, like the lady just said, equally treated and given monies to. All these other schools do not have 25 and 30 students in a class. So then for them to overtest our children when they're not teaching and learning, you know, all of this information that they want them to be tested on. So the monies are not allocated to our children. Our children are not giving anything when it comes down to what other schools are getting in other places. So we all know what's going on, but we're not doing anything to let them know that we know what they're doing, and we shouldn't allow them not to discuss the real issues. We need to fight back and stop letting these people take advantage of our children.
Thank you, Maria. Let's respond to that. How do we fight back? What do we need to be doing? I mean, I think it's interesting that with all that occurred out of the civil unrest in the city, that we are at a point where people are now at least talking about some of these realities of what we are dealing with and experiencing in the city. But what do we want to do about it, and how do we address it in real ways?
Can I have just one thing I think everybody should do? I think they should read Dr. Gloria Ladson Bill article on the education debt. It's brilliantly articulated. She does an excellent job of talking about this achievement gap and reframing it in an educational debt framework. She talks about the moral debt, the historic debt. There are so many debts that are being paid, and she talks about debt versus deficit. She uses an economic metaphor to describe what we're now seeing. So first thing, I recommend everybody read that article. I think she does a brilliant job of explaining why you see
where we are.
Right. It is not just a school thing. It's not just getting charter school. It's a bigger issue that I think she does masterfully without all my angst on it. Because, I mean, when I read it, I cried. I was like, this is what we need to have an argument for what I've been trying to say. Because people want to make it a surface argument about current dollars, current cents, who gets money, who has control. Yeah. But there's a bigger, bigger issue when it comes to particularly high minority districts. When you talk about historic inequities, Fairfax has never had to get a rehaul from the state to get all their buildings redone because nothing has been invested in it over X number of years. You see, These things are part of that per capita spending that we say, oh, it's $17,000, but we have to break down the numbers to see a lot of it is historic. So again, before we can just start talking about the current numbers, we have to go back. Just like when we do our own budgets, we don't just talk about what we spent today. We look at all the stuff we owe. And there is debt that has accumulated in poor communities, particularly places like Baltimore, that we're now compensating for because our kids have been historically marginalized. Okay. And we got to talk about that. And if we're not willing to, cool, that's fine. But you're not going to just eliminate it by ignoring that there are historic inequities that we need to address. And I'm not saying money is the only Band-Aid. It's not. But there are some things that we have to really get nitty gritty about that's going to impact kids in positive ways. But that reading, I tell everybody, please read her argument. I think it's brilliantly done.
So, Bobby, talk to us about what looks different in the schools as a result of these layoffs.
Well, I would say, you know, you'll see a different impact. You'll see an impact on staffing. You know, I know IT is going to be impacted, reading programs, teacher planning times. I mean, this is going to make a big difference. And, you know, Ronnie, you're talking about the debt, the financial debt, but what about the social,
that's
emotional?
That's what she talks about. That's what I'm saying. Read the article. That's what she talks about.
That,
the social debt.
That's
she breaks it all the way. The moral debt. She talks about it all.
So that is that is the heart of the matter.
Exactly.
And the beautiful thing about that is it actually is right in front of us. There, we can actually get into that right now. We can roll up our sleeves and get into that by creating schools where we're teaching kids not the bare minimum of how to pass this ridiculous test.
Tell you, girl.
Right. All right? So just we need to push back on the park. I'm just going to throw that out. I know it's a different meeting, but...
But why can't we have that discussion?
Well, I think
when
connected.
Are we going to... I mean, we see
when you
so
have
many,
it? You got test prep. You got benchmark.
That's what I'm saying.
Where's
We've
it going?
So many
it's
other
such a
examples
minimum.
In the country where districts, in terms of parents, even students, are pushing back saying, we're not participating. We're not doing this. When, as a city, will we feel like we are empowered enough to do
follow the money
types.
There's no well that's for sure there's no opt-out in Maryland and if you want to see
we
a system that's
though.
Thriving and creating kids that go on to the best
that's
colleges
right.
Look at the private school system
yeah.
It costs $25,000 to opt out basically that's I'm just saying that's what it is if you want your kid to opt out send him to a private school but I believe in public education I know we can do it right. I think you have to have schools that are treating children and giving them a chance to practice knowing who they are, finding their voice, speaking up for themselves, making a difference in the world. That's a priority of a great school. Yeah. And we can
but
have that.
But it's not quantifiable. That's
exactly,
why we don't focus on that. But you're exactly right. The social development of our children, and I remember this point that Dr. Ellington raised on another show we were on together where we talked about African-centered schools and what they were focusing on to cultivate and develop their children and how they then are able to perform well on whatever is presented before them. But instead, we're doing it the reverse, where we're so focused on the actual assessment that we don't even think about the actual well-being or social development of the individual child. So that gets lost in all of this. So we're nearing closing. So I'd like to hear some closing comments from all of my guests today. And of course, I will start with the esteemed Mr. Giddings.
Closing comments. I guess my closing comment would be I'm very concerned about the education, the quality of education that our children are receiving. I'm very concerned about the lack of support that our schools are receiving right now. And I'm willing to do anything possible to work with management to ensure that our students do receive the best education possible and that our administrators receive the type of support that they need to provide that type of education to our children.
Thank you. Dr. Ellington.
Well, this always saddens me because I don't think it can be handled in a sound bite, you know. It's unfortunate that people are losing their jobs. I do care about the adults as well because these are people who are viable citizens of Maryland, of Baltimore, who now are in precarious situations. But also really looking at the impact of layoffs on students and coming up with a way to explain that in a way that everybody can understand. I think that is at least owed to the citizens of Baltimore, where he can actually talk transparently and openly about his cleanup policy, because I still say he's the cleanup man.
See?
But, you know, give us some background. Here's how this is going to impact. Here's where it won't impact. Here's how I'm handling having to do this. A way that's transparent and explainable so that parents and community leaders can understand it and respond. So I think we just need some transparency, some openness, and really some straight talk, if you will.
Yeah. Bobby.
You know, I just think that we need a really clear vision for our system. And I want that one to be based on, you know, power in the schools. And I think that's the way, in my experience, you really can create a school where every student is known, loved, and inspired. And you have a super high teacher retention rate. And you have educators getting together and envisioning great education. And then, you know, the student work and the student voices that emerge when all of those things are lined up, it's cohesive. You know, it really is cohesive. And right now in our system, there's a lot of destabilization and lack of transparency and lack of communication and dismantling of what we had going. And I'm worried about that. And I also feel hopeful because, you know, there is no better place to be than Baltimore, Maryland. I love the city. I love the people in it.
You running for mayor?
I'm just saying.
Bobby for mayor.
Stop it. Stop it. I'm just saying I'm glad to be here with you guys. We have each other. Let's keep going and let's do this work as best we can. The kids are in the company of adults.
Yes.
You know, and are those adults empowered and can they do their best work? I mean, the system's not made of steel. It's made of people.
And we can do something about
it. That's it.
Yeah, we can do something with that system.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I remain hopeful as well. We should be hearing from Dr. Thornton in a couple of weeks, joining the show and giving us an opportunity to hear his perspective on much of what has transpired during his first year as the CEO of City Schools. I want to thank Dr. Ronnie Ellington, as well as Bobby McDonald and Jimmy Giddings for joining us today. Coming up next, it's a new episode of Sound Bites, our show about food and our world. When we come back, Mark looks at former governor and current presidential hopeful Martin O'Malley's record on the environment as he positions himself as the green candidate. We'll also hear about a river keeper and how he stopped a gas pipeline from being built throughout Baltimore County and Hartford County, and talk about animals in the context of a new law in New Zealand that recognizes animals as sentient beings. Stay with us. I'm Kimberly Moffitt, serving for Mark Steiner today. Hope you enjoy the show. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for listening. On our way to break, we're hearing Family Affair by Sly and the Family Stone. And again, we're playing these songs because they were top 100 hits of 1972, the year that Angela Davis was acquitted on this day in history. Thank you.